Right now it is 8:15 here on 2SER Breakfast, and a Wednesday morning does mean it's time to crack open the dictionary and delve into the history of this city of ours. Dr. Rachel Franks is in to tell us all about what's in the Dictionary of Sydney this week. Morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Tess.
What are we chatting about this week?
Well, I thought after recent events, it might be a good idea to look at the power of the press and how newspapers, even from the very beginning of the newspaper industry in Sydney in the early 1800s, have consistently worked to try and influence Australians, how we think about major policy issues of the day, how we think about crime and punishment, and importantly also try and influence how we might vote at elections.
This is all sounding very familiar.
Very familiar indeed. So the first newspaper was limited in how influential it could be because it was very closely censored by the government of the day. But once we had two and then three newspapers, things got a little bit not out of control, but certainly got very interesting for the newspaper reading public and for the people trying to control the press in Sydney. So the paper I thought I'd focus on today is The Monitor, which was founded by Edward Smith Hall and Arthur Hill in Sydney in 1826.
Oh, wow.
Now, our man Edward was fascinating. He'd done all sorts of things. He'd been a banker, a merchant, a farmer. He was coroner for a little while, but he didn't like that too much. He helped to found a great philanthropic cause, which we know today in Sydney as the Benevolent Society. But he was, perhaps most importantly, a newspaper man. But he was a man with very many opinions. So he's quite interesting, though, because he did have a very strong religious framework and he was actually lobbying for a lot of the rights that we take for granted today. He lobbied for a free press, the right for an independent government, the right for people to be able to vote for that government. And these are rights that are normally associated with the bigger names of colonial Sydney, like William Charles Wentworth. But he was there and he was beavering away. But he wasn't as subtle as some of his fellow newspaper men. And he was actually the first criminal libel case.
Whoa.
In Sydney. So slander was pretty common in Sydney at the time. Let's defame this person or that person because, well, we don't like them. But slander is, it's spoken, it's very ephemeral. Some people would take offence, some people would let it go. But libel is when those comments are put into print and suddenly they are so much more meaningful and it's so much easier to take up that fight. So over his editorial career, he'd been charged and prosecuted with libel 7 times.
Seven.
He never gave up. He's quite extraordinary. So even if he was in jail for libel, he was still writing editorial columns and attacking the governor of the day, Ralph Darling, who was not necessarily a benevolent man. He believed, I think, in absolute power. He had a very strong military approach to running the colony, and he expected, you know, unquestioning obedience. And Hall wasn't having any of that, and he persisted, which is good on him, I think.
My initial thought was you would think after the first time you'd learn not to slander someone, but now that you're telling me about the people he was writing about, I'm kind of more on his side.
Yeah. He's a very interesting man. So he really did take up the cause of convicts and ex-convicts and generally anybody who was poor in the colony. And the elites criticised him, said, oh, he doesn't really believe in those causes. He's just, you know, wanting to create a bit of commotion and he wants to boost the circulation of his own newspaper. But he really did have some powerful messages, and it said that servants would walk up to 5 miles to access a copy of this newspaper, because people forget that you could still access news in colonial Sydney. Even if you yourself couldn't read, there were opportunities to have somebody read to you.
Okay, I'd forgotten that part.
Yeah, so his messages were getting out there. Like most newspaper men of the day, he had lots of other problems apart from trying to stay out of court and stay out of jail. Labour shortages, those really specialist labour that you need to run a newspaper, such as typesetters, all that sort of stuff, were really difficult for him. And what eventually brought his newspaper unstuck in 1841 was the same thing that actually made many early newspapers fold. So newspapers were run by a subscription process. So, of course, it's not like today. You can't go online, you can't go down to your local newsagents or supermarket and just buy a newspaper. So there was a lot of risk for newspaper men because they would print and deliver to people on the assumption that those people would then pay their subscription to receive that news. And it was like chasing advertisers for payment. It was often a fruitless activity. And when you think in how expensive, not just labour, but the basics for a newspaper, like the paper itself, was in Sydney at that time, it's a phenomenally expensive enterprise. And they lament in the very last issue that they publish in 1841 that the expenses of a publication three times a week are such as printers only know. Subscriptions are fish which may be patiently angled for, but are with difficulty caught.
Oh, wow.
So, and you can see how much trouble they have just through the erratic publishing schedule. So a lot of newspapers would start off quite tentatively. They'd have one issue a week, then they'd do two. Some of them would sort of settle into a routine of three times a week. If you look at the publication schedule of the Monitor, you can just see the turmoil of trying to really entrench a mass media industry in Australia. It's three times a week, it's twice a week, it's Tuesdays and Fridays, and then it's Thursdays and Saturdays. You know, it keeps changing depending on cash flow and the availability of supply and competitive strategies. You know, are they trying to get their paper out before the competition?
And there are so many parts to this story, like I said at the beginning, that just sounds so familiar through to today.
Yeah, so there's that idea of money is also a lot more associated with those early newspapers than people might think. So we think of the big media names today, and I'm cross with some of them, so I'm going to mention no names. But, you know, we know that they're associated with big banks and the financial industry. But that was also the case in colonial Sydney as well. So a lot of these newspaper men were involved with our first bank. You know, they were cashiers and they were on the board of directors. And so that idea of money and media has always been with us in Sydney. I guess it's how altruistically you try and, you know, what are the messages that you want, and is it really for those people that Hall said that he was fighting for? And you have to give him some credit because he was a devoutly religious man, and he did try to live the way he preached, if you like, even if it was somewhat overly vocal and got him into trouble. I think one of the big differences between Hall and some of the other media editors of the day is that Hall wasn't a lawyer. So, for example, you have William Charles Wentworth and Robert Wardell of The Australian, which was our second newspaper. They were both barristers. So they also pushed the line with libel, but they managed to stay out of certainly the quantity of trouble that Hall managed to get himself into.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's right.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
Thank you.
Dr. Rachel Franks with Dictionary of Sydney for another week, talking about one of Australia's earliest newspapers, The Monitor. Lots of familiar tales, I think, coming out of that.